Good evening and welcome to HoopsHD.com. I'm your host tonight, Kyle Lamb, and I am with David Griggs, and we are going to be talking about the North Carolina scandal. In case you missed it, the NCAA has come back with its finding and concluded that North Carolina did not violate any NCAA rules, which means the Tar Heels are going to get off scot-free. Let's start. David, first I want to start. How are you doing tonight before we dive right into this?
Well, you better ask how I'm doing. You better welcome me to the show.
Well, I already know actually how you're doing because we have news that Kansas and Missouri will be playing unofficially, but still playing nonetheless.
Yes. Well, so that's good news. And as we speak, Nebraska is currently in first place, but I mean that's to be expected. Can people hear me out there? Kyle, I understand on your show people come on and no one can hear them.
Yeah, boy, you do one mysterious podcast that never airs because of audio problems and you're branded for life.
Well, you know, I mean, you got to be like me. I do all kinds of things, so I'm not branded for life because of one particular thing.
Well, so I got to ask you, how did you pull off this Kansas-Missouri thing? And I got to ask you a follow-up question to that. If this is so important to you, why didn't you make it count for real?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to get lucky with a couple of natural disasters. So, I mean, fortunately, we had these horrible disasters, and as a result, Kansas and Missouri are going to play. I mean, it's just fortunate circumstances all the way around.
Folks, if you're listening, that is David Griggs. He is a drunk puppet. He does not actually stand for hurricanes and earthquakes and natural disasters, but we have to issue that disclaimer because we got a couple of legal issues that popped up last time. We did not make that, so okay. So yeah, in case you missed it, real quick, we're going to talk North Carolina on this show today, but Kansas and Missouri will be playing on October 22nd, 1 week from day as we record this, next Sunday, live from Kansas City, the Sprint Center. It will not be on television, so unfortunately, if you want to watch it, you're going to be out of luck unless you live near Kansas City. But they will be playing in an exhibition game, and this is a special exhibition game approved by the NCAA. It is on top of the scrimmage and or exhibitions that teams already do. This will be allowed by the NCAA, and all the proceeds will be going to hurricane relief. So that is why the NCAA approved this. And, David, I understand from my sources and doing a little reading that actually it turns out the NCAA is approving this for everybody if they want to add a third game, and they have to it can be against a Division I opponent, but it just has to go towards the hurricane relief fund.
Yes, essentially what it is, and it's really great that they've decided to do this. It's not so great that they've made it so technically complicated. And in my theory, a lot of schools will want to do this, but they'll start to fill out the paperwork, get so frustrated with it, and decide it's not worth doing this. You need a waiver because essentially you need what's called a bylaw 17. Nobody knows what bylaws are. You need a waiver that basically says that you're playing against the rule that says you're only allowed to play two exhibition games, and they have basically said they will grant it if all the money goes to charity, if you can explain to them why you were unable to do something like this with the other two exhibition games, to which the most common answer will be, well, we've already scheduled those two, and we've already contractually agreed to circumstances beyond this. Both schools have to agree with it. That was my favorite stipulation, that both schools had to agree to play. When they're putting things like that in their policies, people just need more to do. Holy crap.
But, I've never heard of a game that was put together without the consent of both teams. That would be,
yeah, I know.
In all my years following college basketball, that would be a first for me.
Yeah. You're not allowed to spend the night. You're not allowed to miss any class. So, I mean, there are stipulations that you have to meet, but the biggest thing and the most important thing is that these are charity events. All of the money that's raised will be donated to hurricane relief. And in all seriousness, all kidding aside, I will be donating some myself. I would encourage everybody to do the same, even if it's just $20, $30, whatever you can afford to do.
It really surprises me that they have not found a television network willing to put this on air. Maybe they just haven't looked, because you would think that somebody would definitely love to put this, you know, on television. And I mean, it'd be a lot of money, right? I mean, you'd think a network would.
I can't. That was my thing. Why won't they broadcast this? Because if this is a charity event, why wouldn't a TV network want to broadcast this? For starters, you get viewers. For secondly, like it gets more of an audience, which you would think would end up raising more money.
Yeah,
now,
I mean,
the only thing I could think of is, well, where does the money go? Like, if a TV station buys the rights or gets the rights, what do they do? Is there a rule against them being able to sell it to advertisers and keep the money themselves? I don't know. I would hope not. But why wouldn't you put this on TV?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that a network could say, we'll agree to do this. We'll do this for free on the school's end. We'll donate, what is it, $150,000, $500,000 or whatever for the rights to this. And then, I mean, the network can still go ahead and make money off advertising to get some of that back, but they're still donating for relief, so who cares? I mean, it's strange to me. You would think that you would want this on air. It would be great for everybody involved.
Right, and you would think the NCAA in their write-up would be like, if a network agrees to show it, then they are allowed to show it.
Well, and the other half of it, too, is you could,
since the two teams have to agree to play.
Well, and you could use the broadcast as a way to go ahead and put out some kind of hurricane relief fund for people to donate. You get the message out why this is happening, and it just increases awareness and maybe gets more donations because of it. So,
yeah, you would think. And I don't know, on a little bit of a side, I know we've had this conversation. I don't like that you're not allowed to play exhibition games that are against Division I teams that are open to the public anyway. Why can't you? Every other sport does it. Why can't you do that in basketball? But now you can play them, but and they can be open, but I guess they can't be televised.
Apparently. we'll keep monitoring that, and we'll see if we can get a reason for that the next time we have a podcast. But so in the meantime, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the North Carolina decision is in by the NCAA, and in the short of it, the explanation from the NCAA is that they could not find proof that students benefited from this above and beyond the normal student body, so therefore the NCAA concluded they could not find North Carolina guilty and did not tack on any punishment for these violations. So, David, go ahead and explain this from your reading.
Well, the NCAA is just having a hell of a week when it comes to optics. I mean, what? They just look fantastic, from being investigated to the FBI to the neighborhood rival, a rival school, Tobacco Road rival school, having a transfer that went to class and isn't eligible. How ironic that that's in the news right next to this, to the North Carolina case where you had these paper classes, these fake classes, these bogus, I guess that's the right term, classes that all these athletes were taking, and then nothing happens. And then you have the announcement that's coming out later this week that they are moving the Final Four to Qatar. why not? The way that it's going. The human rights aspect, Kyle didn't even respond.
Yeah, I'm just going to let that one go.
Okay. But anyway, what essentially they were investigating were student athletes getting extra benefits? And the answer was no. And the explanation was what you just said. The reason it was not an extra benefit was because it was a ridiculous benefit that was available to everyone. The other piece to this is that the NCAA, when it comes to dictating academics at a certain institution, they pretty much are hands off and there isn't a whole lot they can do. SACSCOC, the governing body for accreditation of the South, did investigate North Carolina. They put the whole system, I believe, not just Chapel Hill, but all of the branch schools on probation for a year. Essentially what that is that you get a year of probation. If you're not off of probation after that year, you get a second year of probation. If you're still not off of it because you can't be on it for more than 2 years, you're looking at losing your accreditation. That is a very, very severe penalty. I would equate it to the NCAA death penalty as far as how severe it is from an accrediting standpoint and an academic standpoint. Not a lot of people outside of academics really know or care about North Carolina being on probation, but essentially the people at the school and the people in academia, at least at the administrative level and at the university level on up, they do care. And it was kind of embarrassing to them. I don't really know how else to explain it, like, other than, well, what was the big deal? The scarlet letter, Hester Prynne, the letter A, big deal. Well, in that world, it was. So to think that nothing happened to them and the leadership didn't get embarrassed is, I don't really agree with that. But athletically, like, the athletic department, and that's what's most visible, and that's what most people listening to this probably care about the most. No, nothing really did happen to them.
We could spend hours on the sacks aspect of it, and I know you and I – well, I don't think you and I disagree as much, because we both agree that to them it's a big deal. But we maybe disagree slightly in that I don't think it's a big deal because it's just – at the end of the day, probation just comes down to a little extra paperwork and an extra visit from sacks to make sure you're complying. But you're definitely right. I mean, loss of accreditation would be fatal, because that means that no student can receive any financial aid at that institution. So, I mean, that has killed many, many schools, and you almost never come back from that. But that's a whole other issue.
Well, you and I don't have PhDs, and we don't think we know everything because we have PhDs. And our ego isn't bruised because our university is on probation. So, no, you and I don't care. But there are people at North Carolina that cared a lot. There were.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let me notate this. This is October 15th, 9:54 p.m. as we're recording this, and David Griggs acknowledges he doesn't think he knows everything. Do we have that on record?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make sure that.
Well, I don't care, because like I said, I didn't care that they didn't know everything.
We're going to play back this audio. It is going to be preserved on hoopshd.com, and we'll let the listeners determine what David Griggs actually said there.
I don't think I know everything because I have a PhD.
Oh, okay. But you still think you know everything.
Well, I do.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. Going back to this North Carolina thing. Here's the tricky part, and I got into an argument with Jay Billis on Twitter about this. I'm not trying to name drop, but the crux of the issue is, so in the NCAA's mind, North Carolina had these classes open for the student body, so therefore that in itself is not an extra benefit, because the students were able to join these classes, so they weren't set up specifically for athletes. And then furthermore, now if the athletes were given preferential treatment within the classes themselves, which I contend they were, and that's the part I was trying to impress upon Jay during my conversation, that would still be an NCAA violation. But from the way the Committee on Infractions has reported, they did not find the evidence that suggests those athletes were given preferential treatment. To me, it should have been obvious in reading the emails from some of the professors and to some of the advisors and the communication back and forth. It seemed obvious that it was, but the Committee on Infractions did not determine that. But I just want to make it clear, that is why NCAA found North Carolina not to be in violation, because they could not prove these athletes were given preferential treatment within these classes.
Correct. And I think the other layer of that was that it wasn't the genesis of this wasn't the athletic department, and it doesn't appear that it was happening to benefit athletes. What had happened was you had a couple of rogue professors that made up a rogue department that, in a nutshell, just got tired of teaching, but were certainly not tired of getting paid to teach. So they just decided that they were going to put out almost no effort. Wasn't there a professor the one that refused to talk, that had something like 99 independent study classes in one semester, something ridiculous, like impossible to do. And, you know, they were all getting A's, and rather than teach the class yourself and grade the papers, they had the secretary doing it, and you could basically write 1.5 pages or less and still end up with an A in the course, and that was the only assignment you did. So I think because it wasn't, whoa, we're letting athletes skate through here, it was, I'm just tired and I don't want to do it anymore, but I'm still going to get paid. And you know, that was essentially why these courses came to be. It was lazy professors that didn't want to teach them and just gave out A's.
Yeah, and one of those classes you're speaking of, I actually saw on Twitter somebody attached one of the papers that was turned in that received an A-. It was about Rosa Parks, and it was all of two paragraphs, and that netted an A- on that. Just absolute insanity. I mean, basically, basically this guy was approving anything and everything that came across his desk.
And it wasn't even him. Like, he wasn't even grading the papers. Didn't they decide it was his assistant?
Yeah,
or his assistant?
I think you're right. Yeah, it wasn't even him. You're right. I think it was his teaching assistant that was doing it for him. But this is
now the only reason I bring that up. I'm sorry to interrupt, Kyle, but there have been cases in. I'm afraid to name the school because I don't want to name it wrong. But there was a case at a power school. And again, I'm 95% sure I know what it is, but I don't want to say it and get it wrong, where you had situations where it was a professor that was doing an independent study. So in other words, these weren't classes that were in the course catalog. It was, well, meet with me and do an assignment and you'll get credit for the class. But he was only working with athletes, and the athletes were always getting A's, and they were doing almost as little as what these students at North Carolina were doing. Okay, that is a violation. And the reason that's a violation was because it was only available to student athletes, and this professor obviously had a bias in mind. At North Carolina, these people were just lazy. They didn't care if it were athletes or not.
But here is the problem.
Was it Michigan? I can't say it was Michigan.
That happened with Michigan. It was a psychology professor back in 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the one you're talking about. But it also happened at Auburn, incidentally, but Michigan, I think, is the one you were talking about. So here's the issue going forward. Now, I'm not one of those people that think this is going to, you know, create the Wild West and you know, institutions rushing out to create fake classes for students. But it did, at least as the rules stand now, if this is the NCAA's stance, it does create a potential Pandora's box, because basically – this is the way to cheat if you're going to cheat, is that you set up a rogue department, you open it up to some students out of the student body, even if it's a 60-40 ratio of athletes to regular students, it's therefore accessible to other students. And if you wanted to give preferential treatment, basically this is the way to cheat and help out athletes with easy grades without the NCAA, you know, coming down on you. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. A lot of, you know, I'm not saying that most institutions are going to do that, but theoretically speaking, they just gave a path for institutions to do that if they wanted.
Yeah, but again, you're probably dealing with accreditation issues if you decide to do that. But the other problem is the NCAA, I guess they were afraid to make the determination between what is an easy class versus what is a fake class or a fraudulent class. And I personally, like a lot of the conspiracy theories out there was that, well, they didn't want to lay the hammer down on North Carolina. Well, if you look at the infractions committee, there's no reason to think that they would, like, you know, if you look at the members, why would they be biased towards North Carolina? I mean, I think they wanted to actually kill them. I mean, I think they were all excited, like, let's go get them. Let's go get them. And then they went out there and rushed into it. And really, what they were investigating them for, that they moved so quickly initially, that they were investigating them for something that they really couldn't nail them for.
Well, I think we need to hold that thought for a second, because I want to explain something that I think the average person may not realize. In the NCAA enforcement process, you have the enforcement staff that goes out and investigates this. So yes. actual members of the NCAA, employees that are paid by the NCAA as an organization, they're the ones that are investigating this. They are the ones that charge North Carolina with these violations. The Committee on Infractions is not actually part of the NCAA. It is a separate, quote-unquote, technically independent, and I'm using air quotes when I say that.
Yeah.
But it is an independent committee that is
about 90% of them work for the NCAA.
Yeah, most of them work for NCAA member institutions, but they are a hodgepodge of athletic directors, legal experts, lawyers. It's just kind of a collection of different people, and they are basically educated on the NCAA rules, and then they meet and convene separately to hear the case and then rule on what the NCAA gives them as evidence, and then after the hearings, then they come to the conclusion, are you guilty or are you not guilty? And then they determine your punishment at the same time if you are guilty. So the Committee on Infractions isn't technically part of the NCAA per se. Most of them have, like you said, most of them have indirect ties through their institutions, but they're not technically part of the NCAA.
Right. His name slips my mind, but they just appointed a new chairman. It's Xavier's athletic director, Stalika's school. I wish he was here. So
Bobinski, right?
No, not Bobinski's at Georgia Tech.
Oh, yeah. The name escapes me, too. You'd think we would be prepared for this, but that's not what
Well, no, it's Hoops HD. That's for your other Atlanta 10, we'd be prepared, not for Hoops HD.
That's not what we do here.
We don't prepare at Hoops HD.
Show prep is not a thing.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, so just for, like, as far as dealing with these conspiracy theories, well, they didn't want to come down on North Carolina. That's really not true. I mean, if you look at what the NCAA did, like, here's my honest hypothesis. When the NCAA first came out with their first notice of allegations, they had a couple level one allegations. They were pretty serious. Then they dropped those on the first amended allegations. They actually dropped those. What I think happened was I think the NCAA was trying to negotiate with North Carolina behind the scenes. And because North Carolina's lawyers were playing such hardball, the NCAA came back with a second amended notice of allegations and reinstated all those original allegations that were taken off the second one, and they added those back. And I think the NCAA enforcement staff was actually very upset and wanted to come after North Carolina. I don't think they were trying to give in. I think the NCAA absolutely wanted to come after North Carolina in a big way. But the Committee on Infractions just did not share the sentiment that they could find any evidence. Now, I disagree with it.
Well, yeah, and then 4 years later, or was it 30 years or however long it took to investigate it?
It was a six-year process in total.
The freshmen that just enrolled there, I think, were in junior high when this all started.
Yeah, it's nuts how long it took, but... Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think there was any conspiracy. I don't think there was any funny business going on here. I think the Committee on Infractions just said we don't have the evidence. And I disagree with it. I read the emails myself. I don't know how you can come to that conclusion, but I don't think it was any fast and loose funny business. I think they just simply – the reading of the rules and their determination did not conclude a guilty verdict. And
right. Go ahead. No. And you hate to call out support, but the fact that they did – well, okay, they didn't do nothing. They did – what they did was hysterical. I laughed for about 10 straight minutes. The chairman of the academic department was slapped with a 5-year show cause for not cooperating with the investigation. That is like the NFL – banning me from coaching for 3 years, or the Powerball lottery saying I'm not allowed to win the Powerball this week.
Well,
I mean, what a hilariously ineffective, just stupid thing to do. Now, you mentioned the emails, and one of the things that was sort of alarming about those emails, at least, and I didn't read as many as you did, but whenever you're having that kind of dialogue along the lines of this is what this athlete or this student needs in your class in order to be eligible, hoping you can help us out. That's maybe not a level one violation, but that's something. And I hate to single out the support staff, but that is a violation.
Well, and it's just funny because it's like you said, like as far as this guy getting a show cause, I mean, actually we've learned, by the way, David Griggs, bans do not work. David Griggs has proven that, but anyway, right. it's so hypocritical because, yeah, you're right. They gave this guy a show cause, which basically means he cannot work in athletics for that period of time. Which doesn't matter because he doesn't work in athletics and he probably never intended to. But even if he wanted to, he could not work in athletics without basically the university that wants to hire him showing reason or showing cause why they should not be punished for hiring him. But it's hypocritical to say, okay, well, UNC did not commit any violations, but we're going to slap this guy with a show cause. I mean, it's like if you don't have jurisdiction. Yeah, for not cooperating. If you don't have jurisdiction here, then it shouldn't matter. I mean, it's just the ultimate hypocrisy in this case from the Committee on Infractions for giving that, you know, show cause penalty for something that, you know, they say, well, you know, we this isn't in our jurisdiction here.
Right. I'm glad that they did, because it was a kind of a boring Friday. And then when I read that they gave that all they did was to give this guy a show cause, it was just so pitiful. I mean, we're going to, on Hoops HD, I think, every week issue a Hoops HD show cause, and it will have the same amount of teeth as what the NCAA just did to this guy.
Tim Miles going to be the recipient of the first show cause?
No, why would we give him a show cause?
Well, I think
these are people that are banned from working at Hoops HD.
I think the rest of your Hoops HD coworkers may strongly disagree with that.
Yeah.
We've already given you a show cause, but a lot of good it's done.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess. Well, I mean, just because I can't be on the show doesn't mean I can't be on the show.
So where do you see this, UNC? I mean, do you see the, you know, we touched on earlier about the maybe the Pandora's box. Do you see this, you know, this ruling affecting any schools in the future? I mean, do you think this creates a bad precedent enough to where this comes up again?
Honestly, no. And the reason I say that is because I don't think people that work in athletics, that actually work in the offices and that work in compliance, were really all that surprised. I think that the media, maybe somewhere, but I think most in the – I think most that are actually in the college athletics world weren't expecting North Carolina to get anything, or at least nothing substantial, and hadn't been expecting that for a while. And the reason was, like, you talk to people and they were like, well, I mean, it wasn't an extra benefit. That seemed, I mean, what happened and the reason it happened seemed to be what most were expecting. So if they knew that in advance and they weren't expecting anything to happen to them before, the fact that what they were expecting to happen happened probably isn't going to change anyone's behavior too much.
So I want to touch on, real quick for the next couple of minutes, I want to go into one last thing. I saw saw a couple news stories and actually heard this through a couple people I know that work in athletics. But as far as the college basketball scandal is concerned, it's kind of interesting because from what I understand now, all Division I basketball programs have been asked by the NCAA to investigate themselves as far as potential ties with apparel companies and briberies. And curious if you heard that and what your take is on that. Like, I wouldn't think anything would come from it because obviously these guys have been quote unquote policing themselves for years, and obviously we see how that worked out. But it's kind of interesting nonetheless.
I had not heard that, but it is the most believable thing. Like, the NCAA has put together a commission of largely non-basketball people who really aren't in that world, and their first knee-jerk reaction is to ask everyone to investigate themselves. and are we going to get to the bottom of the dirt now? Woo!
You know, I'm picturing, I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld, but there's an episode of alleged mail fraud with Newman, and Newman has Jerry in this room, and he shines a light down on him, and he's like, are you nervous? And Jerry's sitting there sipping soda. He's like, no, not actually. And that's, yeah. I feel like this is, I'm conjuring up all these compliance officers grilling their coaches and athletic workers, and this is just how I picture it in my mind.
Right, and I don't know. I guess it's not a bad idea, but I mean it's just kind of like ludicrous that we're going to contact all. Okay, so it was all the schools, like all of them, like all 350 whatever of them there are.
That's
all they needed to investigate men's basketball.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is every single one of them was sent a notice saying you basically need to look in your program and report your findings back to us.
Oh, well, okay. I don't know. I somehow think this will turn up slightly less than what the FBI has been able to turn up, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess, actually. I have a theory. Who knows if it's true? I think part of this is they're hoping that maybe the scrutiny will cause programs to come forward and get information. I don't know that they're going to be given asylum if they come forward, but I think that they want programs to try to get out ahead of the FBI investigation because there's more rounds of the investigation coming. And I think in their minds, it would be better if they self-report these violations now rather than waiting for the FBI to come along. That's just a theory. Who knows if that's the case? But with them, you never really know for sure.
Right. And I'm not so sure they know. It probably just seemed like a good idea to people that are new to this anyway. So, they're going to get back 350 reports of who knows what.
Yeah, it is a system that is built around self-compliance and self-reporting. And we know how well it has worked out for them in the past. So why not stick with that, right?
Right. Yeah. So, and I don't know. Well, I think we should make ourselves available. Like, if they want us to, like a reputable third party, I will investigate.
Well, that's good to know. Well, as we wrap the show up, David Griggs, you made the Kansas-Missouri Magic happen October 22nd at the Sprint Center. What's your next trick? What will you make happen next?
Well, we're going to get them to play during the regular season. Next.
Well, if you pull that off, then you will earn yourself a spot in the Hoops HD Hall of Fame.
Right. Well, I'm already in that.
I hate to break it to you, but your name got removed from there last week.
What? Why?
Yeah. Well, you'll have to talk to Chad, your attorney, but it's a legal issue. I can't discuss it on the air.
Okay.
So okay. Well, that's gonna do it for us. David Griggs, we will talk to you soon enough. And I'm Kyle Lamb. You can catch me on Twitter at KYLamb, number 8. David, what's your Hoops HD Twitter handle?
David G. Puppet.
David G. Puppet. Okay, if you want to catch David Griggs on Twitter, and I don't know why you would, but if you do, David G. Puppet.
It's an amazing Twitter. It's the best thing on the internet.
Yeah, that's the place to catch him. You can catch his writing and Chad Sherwood and many other people, a whole host of great folks, John Titel, John Stalica. You can catch them all on hoopshd.com. That's going to do it for us tonight. We will catch you soon enough. Thanks for listening, my friends.